All right, so we ended with this on Tuesday, or pretty close to that, I think. And we're looking at kind of the displacement of point P in some frame, given maybe its relative position changing within that frame, and the frame itself moving. Right. And then the displacement, the frame could be rotating as well as with these rotation matrices, where we have initial rotation matrix and final rotation matrix. So let's take a look at an example that's going to utilize this equation, which is why I put it down a little bit to give us room to draw the figure. This is example 3.6. I think, yeah. 3.6 from your book. All right. What we have is, let me just draw it and then I'll explain it. Clean up this joint a little bit. Maybe. Okay. And we're going to label some points on this guy. Capital Z. I'm going to call. Length of this guy is fixed. I can walk through the whole thing in just a second. Talking to myself mostly at this point. To make sure I'm capturing everything. Okay, so we have a collar. It's rotating about what we're going to call this capital Z axis at theta. We have this guy can rotate this way, and we're going to say it's a, in this case, direction of the right, yeah, theta this way. And then we have a gamma, so we have a pure pin joint at the end of this guy at B. This guy can rotate by gamma. The length of this last link between B and C can change according to L, and the length of from A to B is fixed at 2 meters. Okay, and what we're looking for is for some rotations for theta equals 30 degrees. Beta is 30 degrees. Gamma is 60 degrees. And a length change in L of, so this is 0.5 to 1.5 meters for L. So what we want is a displacement of point C, given this, these rotations and that length change in the DC link. Everybody at least follow the setup so far? That's 30. Theta 50 in the problem. That's not going to matter so much. That's just a number you plug in at the end. Sorry about that. All right. So, what do you guys think we need to do? Find these things, yes. Gave you a pretty good hint of that, I think. Yeah, we're going to have to find these things. All right. And I think there's even maybe another half step we can talk about at the high level. Right. I'm going to describe the relative displacement of C. What's the easiest place to describe that relative to?
B,
right? So really what we're going to do is go find out what delta B is, or delta RB is, the displacement of this point, and then we can find out the displacement of that point relative to that one. And the vectors just add. Right, so this is a case where kind of we've talked, it makes sense to do these things kind of down linkages or something like that, defining frames and rotations and things like that. This is that, basically. All right. So let's go down that road. But look at this equation for this system. Right, we're going to have, in our case, look at delta RB. Well, the origin of maybe that frame that we're going to describe B in, it makes sense to kind of place that at A. Okay. We're going to have what we call our first set of rotations. We'll subscript them 1F, so the final version of rotation 1, whatever B is going under. Okay. I'm going to write the vector form. RB. The change of B, vector form rather than the kind of matrix form. X, Y, Z. So that's still that term. R1 original. That's the original position there. So that's going to get us basically just mapping the terms of our system into that equation. Right? And we can do the same thing for C. So we see the relative displacement of point C. We have the change of the origin of that frame. Basically, we're going to say it's B. And these map just like that guy. This is a little low on the board. Those are the two equations we need to figure out terms for. And the combination of those, we need the delta RB, this one, to get that one. Okay. We can look at and get rid of a few of these terms already, I think. What can we get rid of? Delta RA, why? That's fixed. That guy's not moving at all. So we can get rid of that. That's just a zero. What else can we do? Or can we know right away, basically? Making some assumption about where we started, let's say. Yeah.
It starts with the Z form, so
if we're talking about R10 or R20? Which one are you talking about?
R10.
Okay. What about it?
It's the normal rotation, or the simple rotation about Z.
Simple rotation about Z. I want to say that's true for R subscript theta, which may be a part of R1 theta. R1. What's R1 initial, though? Let me do this. And there you go. Those are final. So built into that, and we can redefine this if we want to. So the rotation at time 0, 0, what does that mean about the rotation matrix? A little bit of review. Let's do some review. Let's do the z-axis. So let's look at our theta to start out with. What's that rotation matrix look like? Well, what does it look like in general? Anybody? So if theta is 0, theta equals 0, what happens here? Well, that's 1, 0, 0, 1. It's the identity matrix. So our vector doesn't change where it's pointing. Right. Okay, so we know, basically, from this condition, that tells us R10 identity matrix. And you'll see that written capital I, or the book in this problem actually writes it as capital U, you'll see on occasion as well. But basically, both of them mean identity. One's on the diagonal. Okay. All right. All right. I think we need to define some frames. Right. They're going to make it convenient for us to describe how this thing's moving. So we have our fixed frame kind of defined by Z there. All right, I'm going to define a few other frames, and then we'll talk through maybe why these make sense. All right, let's make sure I match the numbering. Next to along the BC line. Y2 is a line of the pen, and then therefore Z2. Something like that, once it's tilted up. Okay. And this actually could be rotated a little bit this way because we have this rotation beta. Right. So along the AB line, we have X1. And that means Y1. Y1 and Z1 might be there. Because this is rotated by beta. Y1, and if we do it that way, we can start out with just a capital Y there. All right. And we know that from Y to there must be. We have one more to define. We have that theta rotation. We'll say that the rotation from the fixed axis to that guy. Well, this is not quite right because of this. There's an intermediate vector there, actually. It's hard to draw. draw. That's beta. This is actually theta. And capital X to X1. So we have defined basically three frames here, right? And particularly as things get more complex, I think it's a good habit to, in addition to drawing them, write out in just plain English what they're attached to. This will be important, super important, if you're doing this kind of work in your research or your work once you get out of here. You'll work on this problem, get some equations of motion, and then be kind of done with it and come back to it in 6 months and have to write it up for some documentation. And if you haven't kept good notes, you're not going to remember what the heck you were doing. So help your future self out, or whoever's going to inherit your project after you. Okay. So capital XYZ is our fixed inertial frame. X1, Y1, Z1 is, we can say it's actually fixed to AB, X1, along AB. Okay. And then we can say this for X2, Y2, Z2 is actually fixed to BC. No, we're good. Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you. Fixed to BC, where it's kind of along the vector between B and C. And these are the exact notes I would keep for myself if I was kind of solving this in the course of my research work. We can define a few other things. Let's just say maybe Z1, K1 equals K, beta is 0. And you could also say, hey, Y2 is aligned to the pen. Right. So there's some frames. All right. What's next? I have these equations. Okay. So I need to figure out these displacement terms, kind of relative terms. I also need to figure out these rotation matrices. Let's figure out the rotation matrices. All right, we already picked off that this is identity, that's identity. All right. So we need to know the kind of final version of each, right? Let's look at what does R1 actually give us in this case? What is that rotation matrix representing?
Starting the problem like assuming that it's just, I can start like this. It's just
all
like
the angles this. Are zero, yeah.
And it's just, yeah, so however much it rotates, just like this, right?
Close. Think about it in terms of frames. From what frame to what frame? I don't agree with that part so far. Why those? Yeah. Think about it in terms of this equation. So this is my frame. Basically, think of this subscript frame here. Right? And in this case, we can further define these now that we have frames. Right? This is the frame that's easy to describe that relative displacement in, basically. Right? So it's easy to describe for me, for us, where B is relative to A is in the X1, Y1, Z1 frame. Right? It's always 2 meters in the I1 direction, no matter what. Right? Because this frame is rotating, it's always aligned A to B. So if I need to write that in the fixed reference frame, which is what we need to do, to write the absolute displacement of that point between the two places, well, I need to know how the motion in X1, Y2, X1, Y1, Z1 relates back to the fixed frame. So we need rotation from the fixed frame to X1, Y1, Z1. Okay?
For the first rotation matrix, why wouldn't Z1, or I guess, is Z1 the same as capital Z?
Not always. Hang on to that. Okay. That's the next, you're asking the next question I'm going to ask.
Okay.
What rotations does this system undergo between capital X, Y, Z and X1, Y1, Z1? So we have at least one rotation.
Theta and beta.
Theta and beta. Okay. Right? And so we have theta about capital Z. What else do we have? We have beta. What's the axis beta rotates about?
About y.
I what? Is it?
I1.
I1. All right. So I have there two rotations. What kind of rotations are they?
Simple.
Simple rotations, that is true. Beyond that.
Yeah,
they're body fixed, right? So we rotate from, we do theta about k, and we have this new set of axes. In this case, x1 is actually aligned, right? And then I rotate about an axis that's in that frame that I just rotated to, right? So this pair of rotations are simple rotations. Body fixed rotations. I rotated, and I'm rotating now about some axis in that new frame. So what does that mean for R1F in terms of, let's call this guy R theta, and that guy R beta. Body fixed.
Okay.
There you go. There's your final rotation. Okay. What does our beta look like? We already drew one of those up. It's about our, what is our, let's start, our theta is the one we already drew, right? So I'll just write cosine sine just to save us some space. What's our beta?
Zero cosine negative sine.
Cosine.
Beta.
Okay. There's R1F. Why don't you do out that matrix math? Okay. What is our 2F. What do we want to describe, or what do we need to describe with this second one? This rotation matrix down here, R2F, in terms of frames, from what frame to what frame? Right. Okay. So we know we have at least one rotation. What rotation describes that? What is gamma rotation about?
What it describes the rotation from x1 to x2.
Yep. So what axis?
It's about.
Remember we said, in this case, that y2 is aligned to this pin. That's going to mean, hey, well, actually, y1's aligned to that pin as well. Okay, so it's about y1 or y2, right? But we're going from 1 to 2, so we better write it in terms of the first one. Is that rotation positive or negative? How we've defined this as a positive gamma? What's the direction, positive or negative? Well, put your thumb around the axis on the axis. Right? This is actually a negative gamma. Positive rotation of gamma would be down, how we've drawn the axis here. So it's negative gamma about y1. Okay. So if I want to write x2, y2, that rotation matrix. And what I want to do with R2F is actually not right with respect to 1. Now let us go down this row, because that you need to understand that rotation. But what does R2F really need to describe back here? Remember, we're trying to write this guy in that global absolute frame. So what do these rotation matrices represent, actually? What do they need to represent? What they're there for is to get my coordinates within my frame that's moving back into the fixed frame coordinates. Right? So R2F is not actually just this. It is really, I need to do that. Okay. Between that means I have written already x1, y1, z1. Okay. Well, I know that rotation already, right? That's just this one. So, it's actually three rotations. It's the two from over here, plus this third one. What kind of rotation is that one? Body fix, space fix, simple, yes.
What's the rotation of the frame about a secondary axis? So, body fix.
Body fix. It's about an axis in that frame, right? So we have, you know, 1 plus 2 plus 3 body fix rotations, right? So R2F, we can write it as R gamma pre-multiplied by that rotation. or you can write it out. The whole thing if you want. And just remember, I'll make a note in blue about it, that, hey, this contains the rotation is actually minus gamma there, once you plug in the numbers for the sine and cosine. All right. So I have R1F defined. I have R2F defined. We said, hey, the R10, R20 are just identity. What's left for us to define? I mean, this guy. Right, the displacement of point B relative to A in the X1, Y1, Z1 frame. Well, what is that? Keep going. 2
That's a
0, 0.
I don't know if that's right.
2 0 0. It's 2. What are you implying by it being 2 0 0?
I'm implying that along the x axis, we're just going 2 meters, and that's fixed.
Yep.
And it's not in the other axis.
Exactly right. Right. B is always 2 meters along from A. And that's, yeah, sorry. That is actually this. Sorry about that. So what is delta RB? Got ahead of myself for just a second. Position of that guy is always 2 meters in the I1 direction. So what is the change of that displacement of that point from start to finish? Within the X1, Y1, Z1 frame. If it's always at zero, yeah, there we go. Sorry. 0 meters. All right, it doesn't change within that frame. Okay, so this term is capturing how much the displacement of the point's changing within the frame. Okay, what is, we're going to do the position of point C in the X2, Y2, Z2 frame initially, let's say. And we could write it this way to make it a little bit more clear. Initially, what is it? 0.5x2. What is x2?
The length of it, or the axis aligned with the length of it.
I2 is the unit vector describing that direction, and that's meters. Okay. X2, Y2, Z2. Final is what? 1.5 in that same direction. So our delta RC is what? It's just 1 meter in the I2 direction. That gives us all the terms we need. Okay. We can plug in, away we go. And the book does all the math of multiplying out all this stuff for you. Feel free to, I would recommend you look at that actually. We don't think it's worth our time to just do numerical computation. Okay. So that procedure is a pretty standard one. That's going to be a part of something like that's going to be a part of a lot of the problems we work, particularly defining the frames, figuring out what the rotation matrices are. And you see, we kind of pick frames here. We could have chosen different frames, and largely what it affects is how easy it is to define these things. Right. We could define point C just in x1, y1, right? But then it has a rotational component. We have to worry about that part. Right. So by picking these intermediate frames, it makes it easy for us to fit the kind of natural description of the system is what you want to look for. I have this changing length. It'd be nice if that's in line with the frame. Well, I can do that pretty easily. So that direction is always fixed. And we can account for the change in direction just using the rotation matrices. Okay. So now, before we go on, questions? One way, you talked about having to work a lot of problems to really get this stuff. I think one way to get started down that track is to take an example we worked in class, or take an example in the book, take the problem, write it all out, close the book, close your notes, try to get it that way. Right? And then you can go back, you have a solution there you can go back and check against. Problems we'll get to later, there's multiple ways to go about solving them. So take the example in the book later on, solve it the opposite way, or the alternate way from what the book did. And you still should get to the same answer. Right? So it's a way to build up your skills, if you will. All right, so let's keep going. That. Oh well. We can write it again, I guess. All right. We will write it again. Now we're going to talk about time derivatives. Section 3.3. Okay, I'm going to write up that equation really quickly again. Okay, so what we're going to do, we write the displacement here. And now what I want to do, what we're going to do is basically shrink down this guy. So we're going to take delta RP and shrink it until it's infinitesimally small. And at this point, since you're all really smart folks, I'm sure you can guess where we're going with this. Delta R O prime. And we can write, make it explicit. So I've shrunk down all the displacement vectors, the position vectors. Okay, so we went from some finite distance to some infinitesimally small one. If we're doing that, what happens to these rotation matrices?
They depend on time.
They sure do. Let's write out the relationship, or a relationship, possible relationship between the final rotation and the initial rotation. Okay. So if I write, hey, that final rotation, as we saw from kind of last problem, basically I can, let's assume they're body fixed things, I could just pre-multiply by whatever angles I have to rotate through to get from the initial rotation matrix to the final. Right, I can just keep tacking those on across the way. Right, let's just assume we're going to do some rotation about an x-axis, some rotation about a y-axis, some rotation about a z-axis, body fixed coordinates. Right, and we're saying this is the sequence of rotations that it takes to get from the initial rotation matrix to the final rotation matrix. Okay. Well, let's look at, embedded in each one of these guys is some angle. Right? Maybe theta x, theta y, theta z. Right? Well, if these guys are shrinking down to zero, so are those angles. Because that infinitesimally small displacement, those angles are shrinking down to being infinitesimally small as well. Right? So that happens, kind of the theta I, if you will, goes to d theta I, where that I could be x, y, z. It's just a subscript. Okay. Well, what is where d theta I is some really, really small number? It's one. What's that? Is it? If this is a small angle, what's the sign of a small angle? Approximately. Yeah. That's right. Our angle in this case was just that infinitesimally small angle. Okay. Well, if that's the angle we're rotating over, well, that simplifies each one of these rotation matrices. Right, so Rx, we can write. And I'll write out the full terms of this guy. Cosine 0, 0. I hit myself. Okay, well, we said because d theta is really small, that, hey, this guy goes to 1. That guy goes to 1. Those two cosine terms. Okay, and the sine terms just go to the angle. So that's d theta x. And we have a minus sign out front of this one, so we get minus d theta x there. Then Ry, Rz follow the same pattern. I'll write them up quickly. That's cosine d theta x. These are y's. We have infinitesimally small rotations about these axes. So then we need Rx, Ry, Rz. We multiply out those matrices. What we're going to see and if you just did that math kind of brute force, you're going to end up with a lot of terms that are di d theta x, d theta y. D theta y, d theta z. Right? These kind of secondary derivative terms. Right? If d thetas are really, really small, what happens to those multiplicative terms? Really, really small. So we're actually just going to ignore those. Right? We only want these first order terms. Okay. So in this case, we have ones along the diagonal. Let me make sure I get the ordering of these right. Check that for you. Yep. So we get a kind of simplified rotation matrix that represents this rotation from 0 to final.
Is that over 2 RY or Z?
That's Z.
Oh,
Z.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Now let's write this equation in terms of these infinitesimally small versions of things. I'm going to erase these guys. I assume you got that part. We'll leave that up for just a second. Okay. So I'm going to write DRB. Right? I'm going to say, well, hey, that's just the DRO prime term. Sub that guy in, it's no problem. We're going to do some simplification. There's some simplification built in here that I'm going to skip because it's just basically if you multiply your RF times these terms, these off-diagonal terms, you end up with the same thing. You have a small angle times a small angle. Or a small displacement times a small angle gives you something really, really small. So in this matrix math here, all that really is going to matter are these on-diagonal terms. So in that case, we just end up with this. It's just identity R of P X, Y, Z. Okay. We say, well, hey, look, if you look at these two rotations, that's really just the d theta we've been talking about, kind of the matrix form over there. Right? That's the difference between these two. So, theta, and then we have that. It's actually that. Okay. All this is taking these terms, the rotation matrix, and plugging it in here. All right. We're going to define, let's define d theta. D theta comes from the limit of this guy, basically. I'll write it out explicitly to make things a little bit more obvious. And in this case, each of the theta x, theta I, Each one of those is much less than one. It's a really small number. Okay, it's an infinitesimal rotation vector, we would call it. Okay. All right, so we've gone from an actual physical displacement to some infinitesimally small one at that point. If that infinitesimally small displacement occurs over an infinitesimally small amount of time, what happens for us? Well, we can divide this entire equation by some small amount of time. What does that look like? Yeah, it's a velocity, right? So velocity of point P is a vector. Velocity of that frame. We're going to call this like a relative velocity term. And that's the velocity within the frame. So if I'm standing at the origin of that frame, and I'm moving however the frame is moving, right, this is what I would see the velocity of the point within my frame. I'm standing on the Earth, I see you moving relative to me. But we're both moving relative to the sun at whatever. Right. So that relative velocity term, and those two derivatives actually work out to be omega cross Rp0. We can collect some terms and things and simplify to there. Where this omega is the angular velocity of that frame xyz we're describing everything in. So sometimes you would see this written for clarity's sake. If you have more than one of these, maybe xyz subscripted there as well. If you have just kind of a fixed frame and one moving frame, typically you'll leave that off. It's implied. So we have the velocity of a particle described in a moving frame. Now, so the total absolute velocity of point P is described. We know we can describe P really easily in this small xyz frame. What this is going to let us do is write it in kind of global coordinates, fixed coordinates. All right. Let's write this a little bit differently and take a bit of an aside to clear out some math to make sure we understand it. Also write that. Okay. Well, if you match up terms with that, just look at that guy. Nope, that's not right. Sorry about that. Okay. Rp relative to O prime. Okay. Well, that's going to be, we're just matching terms. That, that's a vector two. Okay. And this relationship is true for any general vector. So we had some general vector, A, let's say. Some vector A, and we took the total time derivative of vector A. We could write that I'll explain that in just a second. Okay. Where this is relative derivative, but we'll say. Not really a partial. It's relative derivative, and that is, hey, assume the frame is fixed. Take the derivative relative to that frame, assuming it's fixed. Okay. So if we write, if A is x in the I direction, that, where IJK could be moving, right? It's just that component of the total time derivative. So in this case, even if IJ and K are moving, this is kind of relative derivative, so it's hold them fixed. Look at the rate of change of that vector within the frame you're analyzing it in. Okay. That's the relative derivative. This is the angular velocity of the frame. So the rate, the change of these direction, these unit vectors, change of their direction shows up over here. That's why we're able to take that relative derivative for that first term. We end up using this a lot, actually. It's part of our velocity, part of the velocity equation, it's part of the acceleration equation. Anytime you have a vector in a moving frame, this is, ends up being the total time derivative. You can take the derivative this way. All right. What does that mean for the derivative of some unit vector? Let's say we have some E vector that's a unit vector in some direction. So what can we say about its derivative? Well, we just write out the well, for a unit vector, what's that first term? Yeah, zero. It's not changing length at all. So for unit vectors, we know that the rate of change is always a function of the angular velocity of the frame that they're described in. All right. Questions so far? Okay. If there are no questions, I'll ask one. We've talked about this angular velocity. How do we actually define that? How do we figure out what that is? Any ideas?
You have to take the total, each of the changes in the angles of a frame and combine them somehow.
Yeah, exactly right. Which is what we're going to talk about right now. Velocity, and maybe we have enough time to get the acceleration too. But they're covered in section 3.4. All right. And we can clean off the rest of this. Where'd it go? All right. So I'm going to take an angular velocity. We're going to call them almost always. We'll describe it in terms of omega, either capital or lowercase. Angular velocity is a vector. Okay. And what we're going to say is, well, I'm going to take up all the different rotations and add them up in some way. Well, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to take summation. All the different rotations, all the different angular rotations about whatever axis we can describe, right? And we're going to think about this equation. So in our last case, we had theta about z. So we have theta dot about k plus beta about I1 plus gamma, negative gamma dot about y, y1. Right. So cn is just whatever vector, whatever direction the guy is pointing. Right. And then we have the rate of change of that angle, omega. Okay. So then what is the angular acceleration? We will get to at least the first part of it, which we'll almost always write as alpha.
So like in this case,
yep.
If we were talking about the problem we did earlier,
yep.
If we took our point C or whatever it was called, and from where it originally was to where it ended, like that, we're taking like the average pretty much over the whole time? Is that what you're saying?
No. In that case, we had displacements of theta. So if I need to write the angular velocity of bar BC is what I would be using this for most likely.
Okay.
Right. What's the angular velocity of that bar?
Okay.
Well, I can write it. It's theta dot. So I could write omega of bar BC would have been theta dot capital K plus beta dot I1 minus gamma dot J1.
And this is over the whole time, we're not just looking.
This is valid for all time.
Okay.
This needs to be valid for all time.
Okay.
When you write this. And that'll come up when you're trying to pick out these vectors. Right? You need to make sure that this angle, this beta dot, is always aligned to I1. Alright, so you gotta be careful about taking just a snapshot. That's a common mistake, is to not think about the system as moving. Always think about it. There's things are moving, they need to be valid. These equations have to be valid for all time rather than just a snapshot. Okay. So what then is our angular acceleration? Anybody? Well, how do we normally go from velocity to acceleration? Total time derivative. We do the same thing here. Total time derivative of the angular velocity is the angular acceleration. And for us, since we're talking about vectors, that means, that summation just gonna come outside, the derivatives operation allows that. But we have that kind of partial term, right? The derivative in the frame, assuming the frame is fixed. We can even think about this just as chain rules of R. Okay. What's the derivative of random unit vector En? Yeah. This is some unit vector. Just wrote it up for A. Well, this is going to apply okay. You said, well, hey, that unit vector length is not changing, right? So for all unit vectors, this first term goes to zero. What's the omega in that equation there, the kind of general vector equation? that we just described 5 minutes ago.
So the frame.
So the frame, right. So let's, in this case, erase, call that a capital omega to separate it out from the... angular velocity of the frame that unit vector En is described in. So, okay. So let's look at the terms that show up in this equation. Okay. What's this first term coming from in terms of the angular acceleration definition? What is it physically meaning? What physical thing is this describing? How do we get to angular acceleration from this term? What's the contribution of that term? What's changing? Right, so the direction in that case is the same as the angular velocity, but I'm spinning faster or slower than I was before. My angular velocity, angular speed about that axis is not constant. Right. You could say this is from the change you probably can think about it in terms of rotation rate. So the rotation rate about a given axis is changing, you have some contribution from that. The second term is just from the change of the orientation of the unit vector that's aligned with that angular velocity, that component of angular velocity. Right. Again, just some speed we have, it's just this term here. Right. So if the direction of a unit vector is fixed, like it is for most of undergrad dynamics, this guy's zero, you never see that term in undergrad dynamics, for the most part, in terms of angular acceleration. Right? So this is one term, because of that, because you spend a whole semester working problems where this term basically doesn't show up, people tend to develop a little bit of incorrect intuition. So what your intuition just developed about rotational problems in undergrad dynamics, question it for a little while until you're able to fold this into it. Because you can have a fixed rotation rate and still have angular acceleration if the axis about which that rotation, constant rotation rate, is changing direction. You guys see the kind of physical piece there, what I mean? Yes? Yes? Okay. So I'm spinning faster and slower about a fixed axis, I get this component. If my axis about which I'm spinning is moving in any way, this term shows up too. And of course I can have both. So if I'm going to describe angular velocity, angular acceleration, right? Well, basically we've kind of talked through this already, but let's make it explicit. What I need to do is figure out about which axes my system's rotating and describe the rotation rate about that axis. Right? You want to pick these so that they're natural for your system and valid for all time. Right? In our linkage problem, Z was valid for all time. Right, the beta rotation, that axis was valid for all time too. Right, the Y1 rotation was valid for all time. So you pick those three axes, make sure they're valid for all time. Make sure you define that frame, which we would have done in that case. Okay. Then you just write out this summation, like we did. Right. We'll do it. So if we're talking about linkage BC, from that problem. Theta dot, capital K. And we had beta dot was about I1, right? And minus gamma dot about J1. So all I'm doing in that case, I'm picking out axes that are convenient to describe the angular velocity or about, writing the rate of change in the rotational angle. And then if I want to write angular acceleration of that, then I need to do this for every component of this guy. So you can just take plug-in terms there for the first one, plus plug-in terms for that second term, plus plug-in terms for the third term, and you have the total angular acceleration. Okay. The trick to all that, and where this ties in back into the rotation matrices, as you see now I have the angular velocity defined in, well, in this case, two different frames. If I'm really going to add all this up, I have to get them all back into the same frame. Right. And we make those transformations by using the rotation matrices. Okay. Picking the right frames to describe these rotations, you're going to have that choice. You're going to get to define what your frames are. Can make the math of this way easier or way harder. Right. But the procedure itself is the same. Find angular velocity, angular acceleration. And then therefore, total velocity acceleration points on a body. Okay, questions? We'll get to an example of working this out on Tuesday. Okay, you guys got some problems due tomorrow. Make sure you get them to me on time. And then that mini project, too. If you're having trouble with that, just stop by. Some meetings in the morning, but it should be around the rest of the day. So after, I think, 10:30 or so, I'll be done. It should be around the office. All right. Otherwise, I'll see you guys on Tuesday.